This is America Weekend. I'm Mike Bennett. It's official. Super Bowl 49 was the most watched show in U.S. television history. And of course, Katy Perry's halftime show was too. NBC's presentation of the New England Patriots' 28-24 victory over the Seattle Seahawks brought in 114.4 million viewers between 6:30 and 10 o'clock Eastern Time, 2.2 million more viewers than last year's Super Bowl on Fox. The most watched TV programs in U.S. history are all Super Bowls except for number 7 on the list, the MASH finale in February of 1983, which drew 106 million people. Naturalist and farmer Greg Quinn is responsible for helping to bring black currants back to the U.S. market, and he grows black currants on his current farm in the Hudson Valley, New York. Here's his latest installment from the farm.
Hi, my name is Greg Quinn. Welcome to this week's entry into Notes from the Current Farm. This past week's snow left the current farm covered in a soft, billowy white blanket. The below-zero temperatures at night ensure that the snow will stick around for a while, and more is forecasted for later in the next couple of days. I enjoy living in the northeast part of the country because I enjoy the four seasons. So when winter is cold and snowy, well, that's the way it's supposed to be. A nice deep snow cover is actually good for my current plants and most other plants as well. It helps protect them from the cold, dry winds of winter, and when it melts in the spring, it keeps the soil moist so that all the beneficial bacteria can wake up the earth and nourish all the new root growth. But cold and snow pose a challenge for many of the winter residents here on the farm. The day after the storm, I looked out the window from the old farm kitchen and noticed three bluebirds fluffed up and huddled together against the frigid wind on top of one of the many bluebird houses sitting on a pole out in the field. I watched, and one by one, they entered the small hole, all disappearing into the box. Later that day, I trudged out to the box through the knee-deep snow and opened the clean-out panel to see what was going on. There were 9 bluebirds all piled up on top of one another, happily enjoying their collective warmth. They turned their heads and looked at me as if to say, "There's no more room in here. Close the door." So I did. While some bluebirds head further south in the winter, many stick around. It's not an easy life. During the spring, summer, and fall, bluebirds are predominantly insectivorous, eating large quantities of insects. In the winter, however, they have to be content with the few seeds or occasional dried berries they find. They're great to have around for insect control, but I really just love seeing that beautiful, striking blue of the males flying through the summer air. Now, what if I told you the feathers of bluebirds are not blue, but they're actually colorless? Ornithologists have known for a long time that many birds, like those with yellow or red feathers, get their color from the pigments in the foods they eat. Flamingos, for example, get the pink pigments in their feathers from the algae and shellfish that make up their diet. But where does the blue in indigo buntings, blue jays, and bluebirds come from? We all know it's not from their diet, because the blue pigments, like those in blueberries, are destroyed when the bird digests them. One theory was that the bird appears blue for the same reason that the sky appears blue. Different colors are sometimes perceived because of different wavelengths of each color. Now, there are 3 primary colors, red, yellow, and blue. In the sky, red and yellow wavelengths are longer and pass through the atmosphere without reflecting much of their color. But the shorter blue wavelengths bounce off the particles and scatter those wavelengths back to our eyes, creating what looks like a blue sky. Dr. Richard Prum, an ornithologist from Yale, discovered that as blue feathers are different from other feathers, when they grow, the stringy keratin molecules in the cells separate from water, like oil from vinegar. When the water dries and is replaced by air, the keratin structure has a lot of tiny air pockets, sort of like a sponge. When white light hits the feathers, the keratin's spongy pattern causes red and yellow wavelengths to cancel each other out, but the shorter blue wavelengths reflect back to the beholder's eyes, and this is called structural color. It's different from the actual pigment color of the flamingos and cardinals and goldfinches. If you grind up the discarded feathers from a red, yellow, or pink bird, which get their color pigment from diet, the powder will be the color of the original feather. However, if you grind up the feathers of a bluebird, after they're done with them, the blue color will disappear, and the powder will be virtually colorless. This is because it was the little holes in the keratin of the feathers that allowed the blue wavelength to bounce back to our eyes. similar to the particles of the blue sky. The colors are not actually blue, they just appear to be blue. So even though, technically, those bluebirds huddling out together in the bluebird box are all colorless, it doesn't matter, because whether it's our perception that makes their incredibly beautiful feathers blue, or the joy of the appearance of the blue sky after a winter storm, the complexities of our natural world continues to bring us simple pleasures to anyone who perceives them. For a podcast of this week's notes with pictures, or previous notes from the Current Farm, or to learn more about why currants were illegal to grow for 100 years, go to currants.com. I'm Greg Quinn, wishing you a colorful week.
With Greg Quinn, I'm Mike Bennett. You're listening to America Weekend.
Big success in a minute with George and Mary Lynn.
Picture yourself in a grocery store holding a list with six items: orange juice, bagels, cream cheese, toothpaste, soda pop, and lettuce.
With that list in 1970, you would have had a choice of 50 items. By 1998, that number is 250, and the number keeps growing.
This comes from the book Simplicity Marketing. The authors say the opportunity today is for people and companies who simplify things by limiting choices.
Think about the key people in your life, like customers, coworkers, your boss, your spouse. Get to know their preferences so you can sort through all the possibilities and present them with just a few options.
Make their decision-making less stressful by giving them less. It leads to big success.
Find big success at BIGGSuccess.com.
Get set for spring with a free Lancome gift exclusively at Macy's. Receive new Visionaire, Definisil, and Bifacil. Choose a day cream blush and gloss duo in a cosmetics bag with any $35 or more Lancome purchase. Spend $70 or more and pick an additional duo. Visit your Lancome counter today only at Macy's.
Now, cheap psych tricks with Dr. Buff.
And Dr. Buff here. When do most kids take their first drink of alcohol? Well, the answer will surprise you. Here's the science of it. Kids and alcohol first rate problem, and researchers have found that a large number of individuals with serious alcohol problems started drinking right about adolescence. In fact, young people who take up alcohol before age 15 are much more likely to become alcohol dependent than those who waited until age 21. The rate of alcohol abuse more than doubles in youngsters who start drinking before age 15. What's the cheap psychological drink? This is a clarion call. First, the adolescent takes a drink, and then if they're not real careful, the drink takes the adolescent, unless you're there to be a parent and stop it before it happens. Check out my book, Cheap Psychological Tricks for Parents, at drbuff.com.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number.
Call 888-359-MY-TV.